In today's episode, SpaceX loses the Falcon Heavy Center core. We got an SNX refresh possibly on the way, and scientists have made computers in human cells. Let's get ludicrous. Hello and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the crazy cool technologies that are making today awesome to make the future totally ludicrous.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
See? Always ring
so
it, man.
I'm Joe Scott with the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hey, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut from internet. And also we have Ben Sullins.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Sullins from Teslanomics. How are you guys doing?
Doubling down on the Z.
Ben's like, you know, Elon's got that weird accent from South Africa. I almost said America. From South Africa. That means I have to pronounce it that way.
Yeah, well, and you know, at the Falcon Heavy launch party, we lined up all the kids there to take a cool photo of, like, you know, hey, these are all the kids at the event or whatever, and we were like, say Tesla, and I was like, say Tesla, and they all did it. So trying to pass down the correct pronunciation.
You got children to say a word. Very impressive.
Well, you would be impressed if you had children. You would understand how difficult that actually is.
Yeah, I have no appreciation for that.
I feel like Tesla is how a bee would say it.
Yeah, are you a bee? Think about this.
Sometimes people call me that.
Well, so you guys recovered from the trip?
What was that? Have we recovered?
I mean, I guess we should start by talking about how we were all together last week, and now we're home. And I got a little bit of travel credit. I was wondering if you guys, who did I get it from? Who gave it to me? Who was it? Was it any of you guys?
Travel cred? No.
I was a little sick over the last couple of days.
Oh, is that travel cred? That's what we're calling it these days?
Crud.
Oh, I thought you said credentials. Like, yeah, no, you know I traveled. Cred, sure. I now have a terrible cold.
Tim's like, credentials? Do I need to call Elon again? What's
no. You know, it's just the airports, man. You always get sick. Joe and I both got, like, super stuck in Orlando, and I almost got pushed back. I was supposed to fly out, what was that, Sunday?
Yeah.
Sunday at, like, 4. It got pushed to, like, Sunday night, then it got pushed to Monday morning at, like, 6 a.m., then it got pushed to Monday afternoon. All of a sudden, I woke up those Sunday night in the middle of the night, checked my app, it said Wednesday! They're going to push me back to Wednesday. I'm like, no.
Oh,
no. No, you're not.
How is that even possible?
It was
like, I'm just going to drive, actually, at this point.
That thought crossed my mind. I'm like, I'll just rent a car. For real. Like, that was insane. Yeah. But luckily, they got me home. I just had to fly into a different airport and do all that dumb stuff. But I'm home. Joe's home. Joe, you had the same thing?
So I went Monday morning. My second flight, luckily, was not delayed or anything. But when I got there to the airport Monday morning... Okay, so I was just there the day before, right? And so I go over to where the security area was, having tons of deja vu, and this lady, this TSA agent, she starts yelling at me, like, no, no, no! And I'm like, oh my God, what am I, what? You know, I'm like, this is a security line, right? And she didn't even point this out. I had to figure it out myself. She was just, like, yelling at me. And I looked, and it was like in a Christmas story where the guy's like, the line ends here. It begins there, right? And it's like 2 miles away. So no, I look and it's like I can't even see the end of the security line. It just stretched all the way across the airport.
Oh God!
And I was like, I was there 2 hours early and I thought I was gonna miss my flight.
Do you not have TSA pre-check?
I don't fly that much, so no. Mm. And I'm on the terrorist watch list. So
no. But, after that,
no, it just kind of. Yeah. But no, like
you can still go buy guns though.
Yeah, but no, the line actually did not take as long as I had thought it would. But I think there were just so many canceled flights the day before, and apparently somebody said that Monday is when, like, all the people that come for Disney, like, head out because they spent the weekend there or something.
That makes sense.
So it was, yeah,
extra.
But
bad.
At least I got out.
That's nuts. That's nuts. Well, we're all back. Most of us survived the trip. Except for one.
Sorry,
Falcon Heavy. Yeah. For those of you that don't know, Although SpaceX had an absolutely flawless mission with the Falcon Heavy, the payload, of course, the most important thing is the payload got exactly where it needs to be. The side core boosters landed back at land. The center core broke records by landing 1,000 kilometers downrange, 600 miles downrange. Absolute bullseye landing. And then on the way home, it tipped over. Ugh. The center core can't catch a break because think about it. The demo mission of Falcon Heavy, the center core is the one that they lost too. It just apparently really didn't light up its engine on time due to running out of TTEB, apparently, which I still don't quite get that explanation. It doesn't really make sense. It's like a quantifiable thing. They should know exactly how much TTEB. Like, I don't get how it could have ran out. The TTEB is the fluid that they use to start the turbo pumps. Like, it's a pressurized hypergolic that as soon as they touch each other, actually, it's hydrofolic or whatever. Anyway, it's hypergolic. As soon as they touch each other, they ignite and they can spin up the pre-burner, get the pumps flowing, and then they can start pumping in all, you know, the actual engine. That's how they light those engines. So I don't get, like, you know how much TTEB the vehicle is going to use. It was doing about the same thing as a normal Falcon 9 in the first one. The center core just ran out. I don't know if it was having a harder time starting or something and they didn't account for that or what, but anyway, this time they nailed the landing. They absolutely nailed it. Bullseye landing, even though it's even way further downrange, which is just crazy. Those guys are figuring that stuff out like nuts. But then on the way back, it tipped over, and it broke in half. And I've got some pictures.
I didn't realize it broke in half.
Yeah, let me show you. We now have photographs.
The first thing I read was that they lost it. It was lost at sea. Then it turned into this, yeah. Man.
Yeah. So this was last night. Stephen Marr, Space Coast Steve, on Twitter, took pictures of it as it came into port last night, just after midnight, around midnight. And it literally, like, sheared. I can't tell if it happened to break perfectly in half, or I can't quite tell if it broke perfectly in half, or if they, like, you know, once it's kind of broken in half, they went and, like, cut it up or what. But here it is on the deck of Course I Still Love You, the autonomous spaceport drone ship. For those of you that are listening to this, basically, like, where that black line normally ends for the first stage, you know how it kind of goes from black to white, there's that sharp gradient right there. It's just a clean cut and there's nothing after that. You're just looking at the bottom half. And
did they not get the top half too, or is that
so what happened
else?
Most likely, here's some other pictures from my friend Mike Seeley on Twitter. Most likely, it just tipped over on the deck, and you know the core and all that stuff stayed there because that's the center of gravity and center of mass. Mm. And then you know the top, when it hit the deck, the
just kind of broke off,
and went into the ocean, which is a shame because those grid fins are really the grid fins. Each grid fin I've rumored is more expensive than each engine. Wow. So,
because they're a solid piece of titanium.
Exactly. Right? They're a heck of a lot of...
was it true that there's some kind of grabber, like, claw thing that they were trying to use to get it out of the water?
Not to get it out of the water. They use an octagrabber to keep it from getting in the water. So I'm going to play you guys a little lesson here. So what normally happens, in the past... So here, ElonX.net does a fantastic job of giving us a rundown on the OctaWeb. This is what they used to do. They used to literally, like, jack it and secure it to the deck and literally weld plates of steel and all these big heavy jacks. But this requires people to go out there and, you know, kind of risk their lives as a 15-story tall tower that's on these legs on rocky ocean. You know,
is that
go
how
stand.
Tall it is? I thought it was 9, like 30 meters.
It's 45 meters tall.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's 15 stories tall.
Dang.
Just imagine that out on the ocean, rocking around, and now you got to get a crew of 6 out there to secure the deck, and it's just not a very safe thing. And
so for scale, just real quick, Ben, where we watched the launch from, that was 7 stories up, so a Falcon 9 is actually twice that tall.
Yeah, I thought it was 9. I thought it was 30 meters for some reason, but yeah.
And that's just the first stage.
Right.
Don't forget there's another 25 meters on top of that or whatever. Yeah, it's huge. It's 70 meters tall when it's all up, but 45 meters tall is the first stage. So I actually have this all pulled up here. This is what happened. Hang on, I'm gonna just mute this. So this is one of the one mission they before they had any way to secure it. It was dancing around on the deck like this.
Oh my god!
And so you can pretty much picture this is exactly what the Falcon Heavy Center Core did. This one they were able to get it back after the rough seas. This particular one, I think that was JC-SAT 16 or something like that. I don't remember the exact mission. But what happened was this one came down kind of hard, and it bent one of the legs a little bit. There's some extra absorption in these shock absorbers called crush core that are non, like, once you get to that point, like, that's your emergency, like, stopping point. And so it was basically a tripod, an unstable tripod. And so it's dancing around the deck like this. And we can pretty much imagine that's exactly what the Falcon Heavy Center Core did. Although all four legs probably were perfectly fine, it was really rough seas, like 3 meter tall waves, you know, over 10 foot tall waves, big swells. And what happens is no one can go out there to secure it. They're not going to risk, no piece of engineering is worth risking six people's lives, right? Let's keep that absolutely first and foremost. You don't want to get people out there when this, again, just watch this and then imagine trying to be a guy with like with a chain and a welding torch and jack stands. Try grabbing onto that. You would be an idiot if you're trying to do that. No way. No way.
So, this is like Deadliest Catch meets you know, the Space Age or something.
Oh, seriously. Oh, yeah. For those of you watching or listening, this is worth clicking on for sure. Just search how not to land an orbital rocket booster. And you'll see it's at about the 1 minute 20 mark. It's a video of a it's actually got all four legs on it still, but they're one of the legs is short, so it's kind of like a wobbly tripod dancing around on the deck of the autonomous spaceport drone ship, and that shows you a pretty good representation. So normally, for a long time, they were just grabbing it by hand and having people have to secure it to the deck like this, like these pictures here with Jax, and then later on, they ended up developing this thing called the Octograbber, which is like this robot like this. And for people were kind of calling it the Roomba. And this goes underneath. It actually parks in its own garage. There's like a blast shielded garage right here. I don't know if you can see. It's kind of hard to see. It's sitting there under there. But then it's got a blast shield door that comes down and keeps it protected while the rocket lands. They open the freaking door of the garage and drive this thing underneath it. And then it grabs onto the actual vehicle itself. And they've used it multiple times, 1, 2, 3, 4, almost, you know, almost 10 times they've already used this vehicle or this Octograbber to grab onto the vehicle. And all it does is it's just heavy. It's really heavy. So it lowers the center of gravity even more to make sure that, you know, that the vehicle doesn't do that, you know, and so it doesn't run around. And it's just a big, heavy thing. And so unfortunately, guys, they hadn't made changes necessary to this yet to make it grab onto the Falcon Heavy center core, because the center core of the Falcon Heavy is slightly different than the Octaweb on a Falcon 9. Like the mount clamps, because normally, you know, think about a Falcon Heavy has to mount onto two other Falcon 9 cores, basically, or Falcon Heavy cores. So it's different than a standard Falcon 9. And therefore, its mount clamps and the way that this machine would grab onto it is factually different. And I'm gonna stop sharing here quick, and I'm gonna find Elon. I did ask Elon about this, and we got the answer to it. Basically, they weren't ready in time, unfortunately. Where was that here? But they want to have the Octograbber, you know, ready to do that. But unfortunately, they just didn't have it ready in time for this mission, which is really, really unfortunate because it's. So stinking sad. Let's see. I do want to find this thing. Where was that? What day was that? Who knows? Elon's been tweeting a ton lately. But what are you guys' thoughts on this? It's really a shame, but yeah.
Okay, so explain this to me. The Octograbber, the Roomba, it rolls out so the core lands. Octograbber goes and goes over there underneath it.
It plays that music too.
It does, yeah.
I wish.
I don't know why I picked the cantina scene, but anyway. and then it reaches up and it grabs it. But what's it grabbed onto?
It's just heavy.
Gravity.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just heavy.
It's just heavy. So the vehicle empty is probably about 20 tons. And, or, you know, when it lands on the deck is about 20 tons. We could assume this thing could easily be 20 tons. And it's got a lot more surface area. You know, it has those big tank treads. And all that, you know, those 20 tons are on the ground, basically. You know, they're really low center of gravity.
Yeah, the center of mass down to the bottom instead of up top, so it's doing this thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So this begs a bazillion why don't they justs, right?
And we actually got a bazillion why don't they justs. And I really do want to find that. I'm still looking for that tweet from Elon.
Wait, let me just ask one thing. So I guess there's something I didn't know here. So they sail it back into port vertical.
Yes.
Oh, see, I assumed that being that far out, 1,000 kilometers, that would be a risky endeavor, regardless of how many Roombas you have. so my assumption was you would actually they would go out there and lower it into a horizontal position, kind of how it is when it's in the hangar before it goes to the launch pad. That way, I guess a lot of those, the securing of it wouldn't be nearly as big of a feat.
Right.
But I guess that's not how they do it.
So if you think about normally that requires a pretty big crane. And all, so first off, this is the first core they've ever lost like this. They've never actually, in all the recoveries, you know, they've recovered, 30 drones, or probably, somewhere between, 15 and 20 at sea. I don't remember how many it is, but a good number of cores they've brought in from sea. And this is the first one that's ever tipped over.
And there were some extenuating circumstances here. There was some really bad weather along the coast, and the swells were exceptionally high.
Fair enough, but you're in the middle of the ocean. I would just... you should just assume that, I would imagine, right? Personally, if I'm looking at a problem like this, it's the ocean. It's almost like wind. You can't really – you can try to predict it, but, you really don't know until you send your balloons up and measure it or whatever, right?
Right.
So I would think, they have to probably sit back and say, okay, this can't happen. We have to expect this, Even if it's overkill for 90% of the cases.
Right.
I don't know. That's where I would imagine.
It's true. They just lost a $20, $30 million piece of machinery, or who knows how much, really, that's actually worth. And I could see them being like, screw this. We're gonna build a $100 million barge now that way bigger and has a crane on it that can lower it horizontally right away. Or something. It wouldn't surprise me if they address this now, because I think that stings. They lost $30 million. They were planning to reuse this core, So they really did lose money on this. Or I don't know if they lost money financially, but they didn't plan to lose it.
I mean, it's kind of a harsh thing to say, but you could say that they still failed with the middle core because it still didn't get back. I mean, what's the point of landing it if it doesn't get back?
That's pretty much exactly – that's kind of the unfortunate truth, honestly. Okay, so I'm going to share with you guys real quick. I switched screens and then it switched back. Okay, so I did ask, if the center core can be used with the Falcon Heavy. He said it can, but the attachment fixtures are different from the standard Falcon 9, and they weren't ready in time. So I think they're probably addressed this, but this did bring up – so we have a couple why don't they just, and we're going to wrap all these up into one. So we had three people that I found right away that were asking about the Falcon Heavy stuff. So Ben Pearson, who runs Where's Roadster, asked, okay, here's one why don't they just – secure the booster by a net of some kind dropped from a helicopter or ropes or something like that. And we'll go – actually, I'll just do all three of these, and then I'll kind of just give you the general summation of all of them, or at least what I think. Starman, why don't they just use the nitrogen thrusters of Falcon 9 to stabilize them on the drone ship? And Nathan asks, add the extra and Starman on Twitter was Starman 64158943 – and then Nathan Fur Zero on says, why don't they just add the extra hold down clamps to the center core, even if they aren't used on the launch pad, so that the Octograbber can work with it? So as far as adding some kind of rope or some kind of thing like that, I mean, you have to imagine how high, 15 stories tall. So now you throw a big giant net over it. What?
A very giant net.
The biggest net ever made, basically. And where's that gonna attach to? Now you still have to get crew out there and attach it to something,
Magnets. And just to magnets. The side of the ship. Whoop.
I mean, the problem is, don't forget, this thing you know, if it's like off axis, say it's like say it's on like, you know, the near the edge or something, you drop a net, that net might end up making it tip more towards one way or the other. Like what?
Yeah, it's like the least scientific approach.
Yeah, like here, I caught a rabbit.
Here's $30 million piece of equipment. Ah, just throw a net. It's cool.
Throw a net at it. I know SpaceX is pretty fond of nets, like Mr. Steven. But yeah, so you know, anything like this, you still are going to have personnel taking and attaching things to certain things. So you got to get people on the boat while there's an unsecured rocket is a bad, bad idea. So that brings us on to the whole nitrogen thrusters. Well, nitrogen is still a limited thing. You know, you have them compressed in these COPVs, composite overwrapped pressure vessels that even though they can hold 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 PSI, they have a limited amount of usage. And I would imagine, honestly, trying to stabilize it on the deck, you'd maybe only have a couple minutes of usage before those are totally run out. And then again, you'd have to be able to go and plug something in order to give it a continuous supply of pressurized nitrogen. And so that means you'd have to get a person out on the deck to plug that in, and et cetera, et cetera.
And the ocean doesn't stop moving, regardless of what you want it to do. The ocean doesn't stop moving.
Yeah, so the whole time it's just psst.
And I don't think people realize how long it takes for it to get back to the port. Like, it takes a couple days, right?
At minimum, like, two or three days. Yeah. And maximum, it's like weeks, or a week, basically, yeah. Almost. This was almost a week. This was like 5 days. I think this is the longest, 5 or 6 days. Mm-hmm. And then Nathan's extra hold-on clamps on the center core. I think the answer here, so this is true, like, why don't they just add center?
I mean, it sounds reasonable, right?
That does sound reasonable, but I think the idea is really they just need to, like Elon said here, they really honestly just need to, where is that? They need to change the attachment fixtures on the Octagrabber.
Yeah.
Per mission. So if it's the Falcon Heavy, they just need to swap out fixtures and make it so that it can grab onto the core. I think Octagrabber is the answer. I think Octagrabber is a great solution. I would not be surprised.
It's like when you're trying to mount a camera and you don't have the right like little fitting for it, right? They just need the right fitting and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
We don't need to invent a new solution.
Yeah. Duct tape not required. yeah, they have a great solution. It's just unfortunate that it wasn't ready for this mission because I think it would have been a non-issue if the Octagrabber could have gone out there and done its job.
But if this hadn't happened, I never would have known what the Octagrabber was. I've never heard of that in my life until this happened.
Isn't it cool?
And I think it's pretty cool, yeah.
They have a freaking robot that drives around and grabs onto rockets. Like, it's nuts.
I'm probably the only one that's a little disappointed that it's not some, like, giant claw-looking thing that just goes down and, like, grabs onto it.
Yeah, that's what I imagine.
It sounds like...
I saw, like, Dr. Octopus just...
Yeah, like it comes out of the bottom of the ship and just... It's like the Kraken comes up.
You know? It's like the Kraken comes up and just holds it down, sails it back to port.
You're mine.
I still think getting it horizontal is probably, if you can, I don't know, yeah, how that works, but if you could, because without fuel, it has to be a lot lighter. I don't know. Like, if you can make that happen, that probably, to me anyways, just from my perspective, it sounds like that would be the safest bet to then transport it.
Well, I could see them this rejiggering a little bit of their thoughts. I could see them either doubling down on Octagrabber, making sure it's like super, super good. I could see them potentially wanting to build a bigger ship because they're going to need a really big ship if they ever want to land Starship.
I
don't think they ever will land Starship downrange anytime soon. I think it'll probably just land back on land.
That's going to be a fun vlog, isn't it? Like the first ride on Starship.
Oh, gosh, yeah. and then there's, you know, or maybe they do cranes and stuff like that and add those to the drone ship and start. But think about a 15-story tall crane, though, on a football field-sized drone ship.
You know, it's not that big. Like, if you look at the big tanker things that transport, you know, bananas or whatever, everything to and from China, it's not unreasonable. Like, we have ships
Let me share with you the crane that they use to actually... make things go horizontal at the port.
But that's the full vehicle, right? Oh, yeah, okay, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, this is just the first stage.
Yeah, no, that's...
Like, this is what they use for the first stage. That crane is pretty freaking huge.
No, but go look at, like, a Chiquita Banana tanker truck or tanker vessel. Like, they're definitely that big.
Maybe, but, I mean, it just seems like...
It's possible, I guess, is
my point. It might be possible. I'll leave that up to the engineers to deem whether or not that is actually possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the last why don't they just that we had there
Nathan
the
asked
hold
about
down
the,
clamps.
Yeah.
So that's on the launch pad, right? So they kind of hold on to it. The rockets mm-hmm. fire. They let go. It goes up, right?
Exactly.
So I was thinking though, and if the Octograbber works, and I think you know if they have the right attachments on there, it sounds like it will, and that's great. But what I was kind of wondering was like, why don't they just in the deck of the drone ship? Just have grabbers that come up and just lock in, just like a.
Well, what if it's like off center just a little bit?
Yeah.
Well, they're just gonna have to land it better.
You could get like one of those 360 treadmill things where it just like it lands and then it like just moves it.
No. So.
Well, no, but I mean, I guess that's the point of the Roomba is like they can have just a little bit of wiggle room and they can kind of find it and lock
it's
it.
It's a mobile. Launch clamp. Otherwise,
I wonder how fast that is. Do we have any video of that thing moving?
No, I don't think it's very fast.
Like, I guess I just kind of thought of it like it, like as a docking thing. Like it's kind of like docks with the drone ship.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Docking from the butt end.
Like javelin hooks that just shoot out from the edge of the boat. Like,
that's just another thing people have suggested. And I'm just sitting there like, guys, this is a rocket. It's not a banana.
Just gonna shoot a freaking dart through it.
You know, it's
they're both long and skinny.
I'm talking about bananas because I just heard a big long thing in Freakonomics about it. Sorry.
Bananas are cool. Banana for
it's
scale.
It's a fascinating story.
I was kind of sitting here like, what's Ben's thing with bananas?
Man.
Jeez.
Ben loves bananas. If there's one thing Ben loves, it's bananas. There's a few more space things that we should probably... Oh, another side note about this mission, though. They did recover the fairings, and they plan to reuse them.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
We did talk about that last week, but it's more confirmed, I guess. The fairings have made it back into port, and they're looking good.
So they captured the fairings, but not the center core.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a reversal from...
Normal, yeah.
From normal. Yeah. Well, I guess there is no normal yet with Falcon Heavy.
Yeah. Not yet. But we did get confirmed, by the way, the STP-2 mission that's currently scheduled for June will for sure be using the side cores that were just landed. That's pretty awesome, you know.
That's another Falcon Heavy mission.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So this will be the first Falcon Heavy that has reused bits from Falcon Heavy, because really the first Falcon Heavy demo mission had reused side boosters, but they were Falcon 9 side boosters. This one's literally like Falcon Heavy side boosters, so
that's
pretty cool.
That actually has me really excited that it's coming up so soon, because I mean I think we are about to get into an era where a Falcon Heavy launch is not that big a deal. It's just another SpaceX launch.
So, Tim, could you, in a very brief way, just explain why we use Falcon Heavy other than just a regular Falcon 9? Because I'm still a little, considering the payload size, physical dimensions are
the same.
The same. Mm-hmm. What like more weight, I guess, is the thing. But it seems like higher cost. Like, is it truly like... no other rocket can put these things into space. Mm-hmm. I mean, like,
so
what is it?
The easiest way to think about this, let's just pretend you're just trying to get something into low Earth orbit, just to make it easy for us. And say you have something that weighs 10,000 kilograms and something that weighs 20,000 kilograms, right? The thing that weighs 10,000 kilograms, picture how much work can that upper stage do? It's the same upper stage, the vacuum engine, single engine. Imagine how far that can push something, right? And like how long it can burn for, how fast it can accelerate something. It obviously is going to be able to accelerate the 10,000 kilogram one a lot more than it can accelerate the 20,000 kilogram one, right? Like significantly. So we can start there. We can almost work backwards. So now we know, okay, the upper stage can do, we'll just make up numbers, can do 3 kilometers per second of delta V with the 10,000 and 1,000 kilometers per second with the 20,000. Thing. So now the rest of the rocket has to make up for that. It has to be able to accelerate it the extra amount that would normally that was required of the upper stage. So that means
because it has to be traveling at a specific speed and trajectory to get into a successful orbit, right?
Yeah, it needs to be about 7.5 I think it said kilometers per second. 7.5 meters per second. Kilometer. Maybe it is kilometers.
But whatever it is. So a heavier payload, it takes more thrust to put something in the correct orbit.
Not necessarily more thrust, but it because it's heavier, the same amount of fuel using the same engine will do less work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, than a lighter payload.
Okay. So the Falcon Heavy, because you have 3 boosters, that center booster doesn't have to do as much work, or the Because the second stage doesn't do anything until it's deployed into space, right?
So that means that the center, compared to a standard Falcon 9, the center core can burn for almost another minute longer.
Right.
And do more work that would normally be required of the upper stage. Because it kind of gets a free ride with those side boosters. So those side boosters are kind of pulling it along, and then the center core can throttle down and just kind of hang out and idle almost for a majority of its flight, so that when those side boosters deploy, the center core can burn for an extra minute. And that extra minute of center core velocity is almost entirely what makes Falcon Heavy more capable than a Falcon 9.
And so do we have things like Arabsat 6A? Was that extremely heavy payload? Or that's what the part I'm wondering about, because obviously, well, not obviously depending on the density of the material, but I would imagine something that is double the weight is somewhat larger in size, most likely. And so there probably is a point where it's like, Falcon Heavy can't even do it because the fairing size isn't big enough.
That's a huge limiting factor.
Do you know what I'm saying? You get to a point where it's how big is that market of things you want to put in space that basically a regular Falcon 9 couldn't do that Falcon Heavy can do because of that extra minute of thrust or whatever?
Right. So we'll put it this way. Actually, believe it or not, that mission could have flown on a Falcon 9.
Okay.
Even potentially recoverable, but they didn't just put it into a standard geostationary transfer orbit. They put it into they gave it some extra lovin', and that made it so it'll get out to geostationary orbit a lot quicker, like months quicker, because normally the spacecraft normally gets, they get it out to the highest point in its orbit. The spacecraft, every time it reaches that highest point, has to do a burn, and that slowly raises its lowest point until it circularizes, and that can take literally months.
Got it. Okay. So
what they did is they were able to actually get it into a less elliptical orbit, match the inclination better, do all these things that make it so the spacecraft doesn't have to do nearly as much work. And but normally, this mission was weird because it was really lightweight and could have flown on a Falcon 9. But the Falcon Heavy in general can lift a lot heavier payloads. Or more importantly, it could take something like, you know, for instance, a Falcon 9 can get a Crew Dragon capsule to, we'll make up a number, 500 kilometers. Falcon Heavy can take a Dragon capsule around the moon.
Mm.
So if you're talking about the same weight, it can get it a lot further away.
So the time difference makes a big monetary difference, I would imagine.
Yeah, and especially, unfortunately, this payload was like 3 years late. So I think they talked about flying it on a Falcon 9, but the customer's like, nope, we paid for Falcon Heavy. And SpaceX was like, sure, we'll do Falcon Heavy anyway. Shake it, you know, give it a nice easy mission for us to kind of push, you know, and we'll give you some extra Delta V out of it, you know. Yeah.
Makes sense.
There you go. That's your rundown on that.
There's so many factors. It's like, it really is rocket science.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's just nuts. The people I would love to see actually how they do that, how they calculate it. Like, who says, like, this is this much and goes to here. Here's what it's going to take, and here's what we can do with this vehicle. Like, that is cool stuff.
Well, I mean, now we have really nice computers that can manage all that stuff. But back in the Apollo era, and it was like human beings with slide rules. I mean, yes, they had computers, but it wasn't anything
like
we have now. And so,
I can't imagine.
That's what blows my mind, is that actual human computers were sitting there calculating all that stuff.
I mean, freaking Declan Murphy, my friend that runs FlightClub.io. I think you met him, Joe.
He
has a thing that runs in like Java or something, or HTML5 or something. I don't even know that you can like do all this stuff, and it will show you the exact profiles and exact timing of every boost. It's just like, dude, what?
Like, well, I mean, the fact that you have a game like Kerbal Space Program that mimics these things with, from what I understand, very high accuracy shows that basically the math is understood.
Yes.
To the point where we could calculate it very quickly, right?
Yes. Yep. Exactly. We have two more space things. Should we keep going with space things? I feel like I always talk way too much at the beginning of these podcasts. But
let him get it out of his system.
We have some fun news that, let's see here. Where is it? We have some fun news about Blue Origin, the company that we rarely hear about, which, by the way, I unfortunately did not get to take that tour.
Oh.
It just didn't time out. The person that was going to give me a tour was working through that shift, so they were unable to give me the tour. But we have some news that they actually signed an agreement to be able to use the test stand 4670 at Marshall Space Center in Huntsville, Alabama, to be able to test their BE-4 and BE-3U engines. These are engines that are going to be used on the New Glenn. And the cool thing about this...
And Vulcan,
you're right. Yep, the BE-4 will be used on Vulcan. The good thing about this is this means that they're... part of me goes like, really? You're just now getting a test stand? Like, what have you been doing? How are you getting an engine ready without this? But the other part of me says, like, this is good news because as they ramp up production, they're probably going to do a fire of every vehicle. And they're building these engines right out there in Huntsville. They're working on the factory as we speak in Huntsville. So, or near Huntsville, I think. I don't know. It's actually technically a different town, like Decatur or something like that. I don't quite remember which one. But they're building them right there. So this does make sense that they actually finally have a test stand secured where they can fire up engines and get everything ready. So... that's just some fun news. I like seeing progress for Blue Origin. And,
can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Has Blue Origin made any money at all yet?
No.
Because I know that they had a deal with ULA about the BE-4 engines and whatnot, so I didn't know if any money had exchanged.
Maybe for that, there could have been money exchanged. And they also won an initial contract with the Air Force, but it is one of those things that's like, you have to have milestones before you start really making money. But... yeah, I mean, in general, no. Yes, I don't know. They've probably made money from someone. They probably secured contracts that are worth money. I know they have, actually, like with OneWeb and stuff like that. They have contracts, but I don't know who's written their checks yet besides Mr. Bezos
at the moment. Well, the reason I was asking was because I'm kind of covering my own butt because I was saying to somebody the other day about that giant factory right in front of the Kennedy Space Center. I mean, I just can't get over that. it famously blew me away, right? But I was just kind of talking off the cuff, and I was like, they haven't made a single dollar, and they're building this giant thing, and they don't even have a single rocket that's doing anything yet, and I'm just amazed. And then I was like, well, now I know they've made some deals with some people. So maybe it's paltry compared to the $1 billion a year that Jeff Bezos is pumping into it. But I just wanted to make sure I was not speaking wrong there.
I mean, they haven't flown – well, they've flown little test things with the New Shepard with NASA – you know, like little 4-minute suborbital experiments, but those probably cannot be worth that much at all, really. So, the other fun thing is speaking of engines, should we move on to other engine news?
Let's hear it.
Rocket engines. This one's pretty exciting. The Sabre engine, which is one of my favorite engines, is all of a sudden finally getting to the point where they're going to be testing it. And the Sabre engine is a hybrid rocket engine. That starts off with air breathing. We've talked about this on the show. Why don't they just use air breathing engines and then turn it into a rocket engine? This is that. This is the Sabre engine, and this is made this is built in the UK. And the cool thing about this is these types of things are used for a space plane where you can have your thrust to weight ratio be fairly low and use an efficient air breathing engine and use the lift of the wings of the vehicle to get it up to a high altitude and get going really fast, and then you can light it into a rocket engine and turn it into a rocket plane, really. But they're finally getting to the point where they're actually ready for real testing, like legitimate testing. They passed their preliminary design review and everything, so that's great, because so far a lot of this thing has been kind of paper. Yes, there's been some, testing of certain components and stuff. The big thing is, how do you get it to go from, like air breathing? You have to chill and re-chill and heat and do all these weird, crazy thermal things within, like, 0.2 milliseconds or something stupid in order to make it so it transfers into the thing. I mean, it's just nuts. This thing is, it's crazy, crazy, crazy beast. But this is, in my opinion, this is one of the coolest things that everyone always asks about. You know, this is like a classic, why don't they just use the air out of the sky in order to produce thrust for free base, or instead of carrying oxygen. This is that. And if this gets, if this gets perfected,
and so
this could be
really
cool.
What's this going to be used for?
A space plane, basically.
So, like,
imagine like a Concorde, almost, that can go to space.
So it would be like a jet engine that gets it up into the upper stratosphere or whatever, and then the rocket engines kick in, and it takes it up into space.
Yep. But it's, there we go, 1,000K temperature drop in One twentieth of a second. Yes. Can you imagine that?
That would be stressful on most materials, I imagine.
Yes, and stressful on the engineers having to develop. But this is a really, really cool thing. You know, I'm a big fan of this, but it's been in this stage, pre this stage, for like 20 years or something. So I've always been like,
yeah,
kind of skeptical. Like, yeah, I would love for
it's
this
like
to happen.
Nuclear fusion.
Yeah,
solid
exactly.
state batteries.
Like, there's nothing physically that just says like you can't do this. You know, it's one of those things that fundamentally totally makes sense. And yes, I hope that it works out. You know, that's, I mean, of course, but yeah, we're finally getting to the point where it might actually be getting ready to do some stuff and we'll see some progress and we'll potentially see it. The hard part is then you still got to design the vehicle. You know, the Skylon is the prime example of the space plane they want to make. But that's still 10, 15 years out, in my opinion, because that's a whole – I have this video about why SSTOs suck, and people always, like, quote, like, well, what about the Skylon? It's like, the Skylon – okay, yes, you can get it into space, but you still have to bring it back down from space, and we know how hard that is. Look at Starship, and look at the space shuttle. Look at capsules that have ablative heat shields. Look at how punishing coming back down from space is. And then tell me that that's going to be easy. You know, it's not. Yeah. And now your entire vehicle has to be coated in this stuff. Or whatever you're going to do for reentry, so it'll be interesting. But I love it. I do love it. This would be a game changer that would make an SSTO possible.
Speaking of space planes, this is one of those cases where I saw a headline and didn't bother to read the article, so I don't know what the story was about. But what's the deal with the Dream Chaser?
What's the deal with the Dream Chaser? So that one,
is this the thing you hang inside of your car?
Yes.
That's the thing you hang above your bed to keep the bad spirits away.
So let me show you, Ben, you've probably never seen this because you don't see things.
It's like a mini space shuttle.
It's a mini space shuttle. It's actually a really, really old design.
I'm retired, guys. I don't do, yeah.
So this is by Sierra Nevada.
That's Sierra Nevada.
They actually won. They were trying to get the commercial crew contract that Boeing and SpaceX won. Originally, this was a crew vessel. They did not win. They were not selected for that. You can see this one has windows. That's because it is still – they still do want to put people on it someday.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, they did win the commercial resupply contract number two that SpaceX and currently it's SpaceX and Northrop Grumman. Northrop Grumman just launched yesterday with an Antares and a Cygnus capsule, finalizing their round one of commercial resupply missions. So congrats to Northrop Grumman, previously Orbital ATK. But this is, they will be flying with, the round two of commercial resupply contracts alongside with the, SpaceX will probably be using Crew Dragon or Dragon 2 cargo version for most of their, they might still use a couple, version one for the commercial resupply two, but they plan to use the twos, I think. And then, Northrop Grumman will keep using the Cygnus capsule. So they will be a third player and they will, we'll see another. Another vehicle.
Maybe that's what I saw the headline was about. But I'm not sure.
And this will launch on top of an Atlas V. And I think the wings for that had to fold up dihedrally. So, like, get closer in. Kind of touch the... Just the tips will touch. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just wanted to say just the tips. and they'll kind of fold in. And then they have to fit it inside of a fairing. Because otherwise, having that weird aerodynamic thing at the nose of a rocket is kind of scary. So
it's actually in a fairing.
I believe so. I better double check that.
Could you imagine if it was human, people were flying in it, and you're like inside of a fairing, of this thing?
They wouldn't have allowed it, actually. No. That might be one of the biggest reasons why it wasn't selected to carry people at first. And I don't know how they would get around that. I don't know what their plan is for that. Because unless you plan to abort the whole fairing, which you can do, Soyuz does that. Soyuz capsules inside of a fairing. You can pull the whole fairing off of a vehicle with an abort system.
We just need to change the laws, and then we're good.
What?
The laws of physics?
No. The laws like saying, don't do that.
It's not that simple, Ben.
If Mark Watney can take off from the surface of Mars with just a tarp over his head.
In a convertible. Yeah. So this is, here's like the, look at that.
So did they just paint it to look like the space shuttle?
It's using similar materials as a space shuttle, actually.
I don't see tiles, though.
It might not be tiles. I don't actually know too much about their heat shield material, but
yeah.
There's physics typically dictates this stuff, and you don't in space flight. You honestly don't really paint things to look like something. You just do what makes sense, you know. Yeah,
right. That's what I'm saying. Like, it kind of looks like they were going for that, but I'm not. Like, there probably is a reason, right?
Yeah, there's always a reason for everything with these things. But it's cool. I like this vehicle, and I think it'd be cool to see land. But the big thing I think with Crew 2 is you can't. You say you do abort with it. You have to use the wings. You know, it doesn't have like a parachute system. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make a ton of sense for Crew, I don't think.
Yeah.
Unless they have a cool way of still deploying aborting out of the fairing, then it drops out. But what if the wings are damaged? Like, maybe it still has chutes or something. I don't know. I don't know.
You know, it kills me how concerned we are now about abort systems when the space shuttle totally didn't have anything like that for all 30 those years.
Yeah.
I mean, and we see how that worked out, I guess. But I just find that interesting.
I think we are at kind of peak, like, scaredy catness almost, like very like we're very concerned about crew safety, which is fine, but I would like to see us take one step backwards. Like, there can be a little risk involved. Like, this is a scary thing. You're going to space. You're going 10 times faster than a bullet. There's going to be some risk.
I guess we're past the steely-eyed Rocket Man stage, and we're more now into, like, let's send scientists up there. And
yeah,
well, that's true. And people.
Pop stars. Yeah.
That's true.
Can we move on to some other new vehicle designs? Since
yes, please. I'm tired of talking.
New vehicle designs. Tim, could you share your screen, possibly?
I'm working on it, jerk. Sorry.
Well, for those of you watching, you're seeing it. For those of you listening, we have some new information about a Tesla Model S and X refresh. First off, if you guys don't know, because I don't know why I've been getting this question a lot, like, what is the Tesla Model S? The Model S is the sedan, the larger version of the sedan, and the Model X is the SUV version, although it's kind of a smaller SUV if you think of, like, American-style SUVs.
It's still huge. I just drove it around for a week. It was a boat.
I mean, you're used to driving a very small car, so...
It's not a tiny car. It's a normal car.
That SUV. Big enough to land a Falcon 9 core on.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thanks, Joe.
Sure. Okay. So the Model S and the Model X are the more premium versions of Teslas, you could say. The Model S is the sedan. The Model X is the crossover SUV. That's what it really is. But anyways, they are getting a new interior, and this new interior promises, this is from Electrek, they promise to look similar to the Model 3, where you have a big center display instead of, I'm sorry, you just have the single center display instead of the multiple displays like you have currently with what's called a binnacle dash. I hate saying that. It, like, hurts my mouth. But where you have, like, a typical dashboard that's behind the steering wheel that you can see, as well as a very large center screen. So, you know, we already knew kind of about this interior refresh. It's been rumored for a very long time. There is apparently more information coming out. Notably that the new refresh will include an upgrade to the battery technology. Now, currently, the Model S and Model X use the very tried and true cells that are the size known as 18650. And this is not something they invented. It's something that's been around for a very long time. One of the most reliable type of lithium ion cells you can buy. But they've upgraded that, or they changed the form factor and a little bit of the chemistry, I believe, for the Model 3 with a new battery cell called the 2170. And for a lot of people, in fact, I think we had a why don't they just put those in the Model S and X? Because they appear to offer better battery, like a lifespan, essentially, like better durability, as well as some faster charging rates, including
the new one.
Yeah. The 2170 cells, including the 250 kilowatt charging speed, which if you were to think of it, that if you had a car that could, if you had a big enough battery, that could add 1,000 miles of driving range in 1 hour. So in 5 minutes, you can get about 70 or so miles. of range added with the new 250 kilowatt charging speeds. So all of this stuff is coming or is rumored to be coming now to the Model S and X, whereas before Elon has numerous times said that they will not be upgrading that. So, you know, this is a leak, a report of, I don't know if you want to call it a rumor. Tesla has not commented on this. It's not official yet. But it's exciting. And I would say, you know, it does make a lot of sense. Another thing, as I think Tim has on the screen here, is the CCS charging capability for the Model S and X, which if you don't live in the United States and don't use a supercharger, CCS is a very common standard used throughout the rest of the world for high DC fast charging is what it's known as, so kind of like level 3 charging speeds, and so that's common. That's already in the Model 3, I believe, in Europe and Asia, and it sounds like it's coming to the Model S and X as well.
Because currently, it's not
correct.
On the S and X in Europe?
You have I believe you do have a different adapter for the S and X, and you have a CHAdeMO adapter and different like things you can do, but it's not built into the charger like it is for the Model 3, where it's just like native. You know, plugs in, because the superchargers, I think some of the newer superchargers in Europe have CCS charging, which is a standard. So like other electric vehicles do have those as well. It's not Tesla's own proprietary system that they've designed.
Crazy. What do you think about this, Joe? Did you see this coming?
I mean, they're going to have to do something. I really think the S and the X are slipping behind. They're almost becoming afterthoughts, especially as the Y starts to come online. Something else that was in that article, and Ben, you didn't say anything about it, but I'm curious if you know more in the back of your head brain, about Project Raven. They mentioned Project Raven. It's like a next generation motor, electric motor that they're working on.
Ooh. No, I didn't pick up on that.
It just kind of like mentions it in an article or in a paragraph.
I'll pull that up real quick here again. Electric talked about this a week ago or so, but it's talking about a motor upgrade that are more similar to the motors that are in the 3, which are those permanent something.
Permanent magnet motors.
But they're also...
The key difference between them, one is the Model 3 has what's known as a reluctance motor.
Oh, here we go. Yep.
And the Model S and X have what's known as an induction motor, essentially.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, permanent magnets for reluctance system. But there's something else into it. It's like a single something. It's like a Sharpie. I forget what they call it. But yeah, there's... So that's very interesting. So I guess I can comment. I don't know about the Project Raven, but I can comment a little bit about the difference between the motors. And this, you know, basically comes from watching Jason Fenske at Engineering Explained.
he's really good.
Oh my god, it's amazing!
Watch his channel; he's really, really good.
Yeah. So one of the differences is that, and actually, we have some guys here in San Diego at a company called EV West who do these like aftermarket conversions to electric vehicles, and it's fascinating stuff. They do really, really cool work. And I talked to them a little bit about it. They think the reluctance style motor is the best motor that you can get. Now, there are some challenges with it, and they believe that you can overcome that with software. And I think we've seen a little bit of this with the Model 3 already, with that over-the-air update that gave us a 5% power boost, as well as some of us got added range. So that motor, I think, is that style of motor is the like best one you can get right now and for the foreseeable future. Now, the Model S and X do not have that, but the motors they do have other advantages, notably that the software is more mature and you get better performance. So this is why the Model S is still currently the speed champion in terms of acceleration over the Model 3. And maybe there's other political reasons why they would do that, but that is one of the key reasons. In fact, the Model 3 performance has an induction motor in the front in order to overcome the problems that the reluctance motor has with that quick acceleration. So in terms of like normal driving, you'll never notice, but in terms of performance and, you know, those kind of things, the induction motor has some advantages. So I think, you know, I mean, I don't know, like the reluctance motor seems like the right way to go, but maybe this is their, you know, next version of that, which overcomes some of the challenges that the current ones have.
And they say in that electric article that the reluctance motor can be 97% energy efficient, whereas the other ones that are currently in the S and X are 93% efficient. So that's pretty substantial. You can help eke out more range, you know, with that.
For sure. Yeah. No, the reluctance motors are the way to go for the future.
And the gas engines are, what, 23, 25%?
Yeah.
21, I think it
like
is.
The best ever is, like, maybe close to 30 or something. Like, something like that. Or not best ever, but a really good car.
I have a video coming out tomorrow about this, and the quote I use is from the U.S. Department of Energy, which puts it between 16 and 21% for internal combustion engines.
Wow.
And they put, but they put electric vehicles at, like, 65 or 64%. So... Hmm. You know.
Well, it all depends on how you factor in, like, is it just how it converts energy into motion, or is it to right. factor in how the energy is produced and then transferred to the vehicle?
Yeah, Joe, you did a video on this, right?
Yeah, I mean, I did an awesome job. But no, but there are a lot of factors involved, and it's kind of squishy. It's kind of hard to nail down exactly whenever you see these percentage numbers, like what exactly they're taking.
Mm-hmm.
It's like any time you look at any numbers, there's all you have to try to understand the context of what it's measuring, and then how the raw data were gathered to come up with that measurement.
Yeah.
Right. Because if the
says the data guy.
Right. The U.S. Department of Energy says, oh, it's 65% or whatever. Okay. Well, what are you measuring? Because obviously, as we just talked about, electric cars have very different kinds of motors that produce different results. I mean, battery, like the process of taking the energy out of the battery cells and moving the car forward isn't just a two horse race. It's not just the battery and the motor. There's all kinds of other things in between there. Mm-hmm. So, what do those play a factor in? And when you measure overall and you're making a statement like electric vehicles, that's a very broad span of technology to try to measure, right? So I don't know. Yeah, I think objectively they are more efficient. Yes. 2 to 3 times more is like a conservative estimate. Could be many more. You know, your mileage may vary, literally.
Well done.
I just want to say again, you know, I would talk about this, that I'm really happy that those guys at Frunkia had an X for me to drive for the week, because it made me appreciate, in my opinion, how refined and thought out like the 3 really is. You know, just ergonomically, like where the switches are, just the feel and the finish of the 3, I feel like is a more mature vehicle, even though it's a lower price vehicle compared to the S and X. And I think the S and X, you know, Ben, you could get in your car, which is what, a 2013 or 14, your S, and you could get in a P100D today, and you won't. An average person sitting there probably won't notice too many things. Yes, yours doesn't have some features,
right? Well,
but
no, I mean,
overall car is about the exact same, you know.
This is a good point to bring up, because that's exactly how I feel. So just to overall, in terms of the story, I think the S and X are definitely overdue for a refresh. I think it's very welcomed. I'm really glad that they're talking about batteries, potentially a new motor, whatever. Like, that is very much overdue, which also makes sense when you look at the sales for the S and X and the production being very low. It makes sense that there's going to be something big happening here. So hopefully we'll see that soon. But to your point, I've seen a lot of comments online about people that bought, they had, you know, 2013, an older Model S, and then they bought a brand new one, and they're like, wow, these are light years apart. I disagree with that. And I say that, you know, I've had my Teslas for a while now, and I've driven, you know, every one you could imagine. And I get in it, like, every now and then I'll have a rental for whatever reason. I'll get in a brand new or very, you know, much newer Model S, and I'm not blown away at all. I'm like, oh, it's basically my exact car. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, it's faster. Autopilot is really cool. I actually still like Autopilot version 1. But anyways, things like that. Like you said, there's more features. But in general, I'm like, I don't see a $100,000 difference here, right?
Right.
Other than when you're trying to race. I mean, nothing. Yes. Like, the P100D Model S is still just completely different than any other Tesla when it comes to acceleration. But you know, other than that one, that's like a one trick pony, right? So
yeah
you're right. I mean,
I just think
it's overdue.
I think it's time, and I think especially if they can get it, you know, with new battery technology, they can charge faster, with new motors they can help increase range, and maybe a bigger battery pack altogether. You know, maybe they could fit a 125 in there now or something.
That's right. I think it mentioned that in the article as well. But I mean, I think we're all kind of expecting that, really.
If they can cross the 400-mile barrier or 600-kilometer barrier,
yeah,
game over.
They
just
will. They
full
will, for
blown.
Sure. Now, there's something else to be said about this, that I know that so many people, they're, you know, the Model 3 is amazing and this is new and it's exciting and there's, you know, I don't want to take away from that at all. But there are definitely a group of Tesla owners that have had their Model S's and Model X's for years now who don't want the Model 3, who get in it and don't like it and don't think it has the luxury and the things that, that they have become accustomed to. I know I now when I got my Model 3, it was much less mature than the one you guys are driving now. So definitely, like, legitimately, I think anybody that, that got in would be like, what? It's missing this. The camera sucks, blah, blah, blah. So there were plenty of things to complain about. Model 3 is still fantastic, but there is definitely a group of buyers that do not want the Model 3 or the Model Y. So this, I think, will be a very, very welcomed change in addition. I think the Roadster did a little bit of that where a lot of people, you know, because let's be honest, like to be a Model S or Model X owner prior to the Model 3 and even the used Model S's, you had to be pretty affluent, right? Like these were not cheap vehicles by any standard. So you want the bells and whistles. You want all those added little tiny things here, you know, the automatic lift gate and things like that. So when the Roadster came out, I think people were like, it was a refreshing, like, oh, yes, Tesla is still doing that crazy over-the-top stuff that, like, is what I wanted. Mm-hmm. The Model 3, you know, just doesn't have a lot of that by design. But this, you know, hopefully will help, you know, will be a good fit for those folks that do want those things. I think you'll see a lot of people trade in, sell their Model S's and Model X's for these new ones whenever they come out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Because what else are you going to buy, really?
Yeah.
You can't go back.
I want Vince, damn it.
I think the Porsche Taycan might be cool. That might be the only like real competitor here, but I don't even know if they're making it or what's going on with it. So
yeah, I just really
is
hope
that a four seater, a Taycan.
I think so. I don't know.
And by the way, is it Taycan? Is it Taycan? Is it Taycan? Is it Bob? I've heard it so many different
ways. Is it Porsche or Porsche? I mean, they always have problems.
They actually released a video on that. So officially it's Porsche. But yeah. Not that I'm one to pronounce things, you know, how they
ever
want me to. But, you know, it is weird because so it's a German company, but these names are what? Panamera? Right,
yeah, they sound very Spanish.
Carrera, that means race. It literally means like a race car is auto de carrera. So, okay, so is it Spanish? You know, like Lamborghini is an Italian company, but all the brands are named after Spanish bulls from famous bullfights.
Hmm.
What? Yeah. Because their logo is a bull, right? You look at these things, you're just like, what? So who the hell knows?
Yeah,
say it how you want to say it. Just you know, give them the money and they're happy. Nothing else matters.
Yeah.
Well, can I do a little mini rant?
Yes. Joe rants. I can't wait to get it.
So this is inspired by Fully Charged and what Robert has been talking about on his channel. And I feel like this needs to be discussed a little bit more because it's disgusting to me. The whole self-charging car thing. Are y'all familiar
with
this?
The solar?
No.
Self-charging car.
I don't get it.
It's,
no.
All right. So y'all haven't heard about it. So let me put this out there because apparently this is confusing some people.
It's confusing me already.
Perpetual motion inside of
it? Yeah. Well, that's what they make it sound like, right? Well, so Toyota, and I talked about this in my hydrogen video, they have never embraced electric. The RAV4 was like a compliance vehicle that they just did to, you know.
Made by Tesla.
And stuff. Well, there you go. But so they've always been hydrogen. I'm not anti-hydrogen, which is like anti-matter. But
I'm more anti-helium.
Well, there you go. All right. So self-charging cars is what Toyota has begun calling their hybrids.
Oh, yeah.
It's their new little marketing slogan for their hybrid cars. Now, it might be some like next generation hybrid that's a little bit more efficient than previous versions or something like that. But they're calling it self-charging because the gas motor charges the batteries.
Oh, my God.
So the reason, how do you charge the gas motor?
Yeah, I guess you have to, yeah.
You have to put gas in it. What?
So they're making it sound like it's this brand new technology where it's the car. So here's the deal. they fought against doing electric all this time, but they still want to use the terminology of electric to make sales and confuse people. So, and that's gross.
Yeah.
And like Robert has been talking about this on the Fully Charged channel, so I'm just kind of like feeding off of him a little bit here. But he said he's had people coming up to him and saying, like, what's this new self-charging technology? Can you explain this? How does this work? And he's like, it's a hybrid.
It's just straight up.
It's the same thing that I've been doing for 10, 15 years.
You have a gas generator.
They just started marketing it like this.
Wow. Oh, does hybrid affect performance? Never. Our models actually work better than standard vehicles, especially when you start in the EV, electric vehicle mode, and allow your Lexus to switch to petrol when the need arrives.
Especially when it's an EV.
Yeah, yeah. This is our hybrid is great when it's running without the engine.
Yeah, it doesn't answer the question how you charge the gas part, though. It's weird. Self-charging.
Our hybrid systems will self-charge the batteries of the electric motor through the innovative energy conversion and regenerative braking.
An alternator charges your lead-acid battery.
Yeah,
right?
So yeah.
Yeah.
Haven't cars pretty much been self-charging for decades?
Yes.
This is hilarious.
So anybody watching, anybody listening, don't fall for this self-charging BS. It is literally just a hybrid car that they've been doing for the last 10, 15 years.
And a hybrid car isn't a bad thing. Let's not say that that's a bad idea. So, but don't rename it something just so you can try to like ride the EV train. Like, go make a freaking EV. I don't know why Toyota's been so reluctant to make an EV.
So is that a PHEV or is that just like a regular hybrid kind of a thing?
Regular hybrid.
Is there any plug-in hybrid, PHEV?
Okay, so the Chevy Volt with a V is technically a hybrid, but the way it works is you have, I believe, 30 or maybe even more miles of range that it runs purely electric.
Right.
So essentially when you're driving, it's an electric car until you run out of charge.
Yes.
And then
it's more of a range extender.
Right.
Major range, yeah.
For a lot of people, what they end up happening is their commute to work and back is less than the electric range. So it's kind of like a really low range electric car. But then if you need to hop on a road trip, you can do that, and it's normally convenient like a gas car.
Mm-hmm.
So are they saying with this one that it actually runs on electric, or because like the Priuses, I think they only ran on electric under like 10 miles an hour or something, right?
Yeah.
A regular hybrid, I don't believe, can go normal freeway
depends
speed.
Like the Hybrid Accord has a really unique system where it's primarily an electric motor, and that actually acts as your not as your differential, but it acts as your torque converter. So it actually physically runs purely electric up to like 50 or 60 miles an hour, and at which point it couples with the engine and will start spinning with the, it's really weird. So it works almost as your torque converter. So it is always basically driving the wheels. But this Toyota thing, according to them, no plug-in required. Unlike electric cars or plug-in hybrids, you'll never have to connect a Lexus hybrid to a power socket. They're self-charging and always ready to go.
You got to plug it into the gas pump.
Yeah. That sounds so misleading. They're self-charging and always ready to go. Like, that just sounds like you're ready.
Marketing. This goes back to Elon's statements about how much Tesla cares about their vehicles and how they're made. Like, everybody cares deeply about everything in terms of how it's made and how it's designed, whereas other car companies, their cars are made by the marketing and finance departments to basically squeeze as much profit and lie as much as you can to make something sound new and exciting.
Can I just say one little, I mean, this is sort of off topic, but not really, just a little bit, sort of, but not really, but kind of. Anyway, when I was in Florida and I had my Toyota Corolla
that
I rented. You were in Florida?
Sorry.
I was in Florida. I wasn't a hologram. The car that I had before, the car that I have now, was a turbo diesel Volkswagen Jetta, and it got insane gas mileage. That's why I got it. And I had it for a very long time, but it got like almost 600 miles to a tank of gas or diesel, whatever. So that I was used to that kind of range on my car back then. And so now I've got the Model 3, and it gets now like 325, which is like sort of almost half of what I used to get, you know? So, like, I was kind of thinking about this sort of range hit that I've taken since I've gotten it. As happy as I am with the car, you know? But then I got into the Toyota while I was down there. And this isn't a slam on Toyota. I'm just saying, like, you know, the thing was filled up to the top, and the little thing on the dashboard, it had 370 miles before it needed to be filled up. Hmm. And I was like, that's 50 miles more than I'm getting in my electric car.
Right.
Yeah.
And not... I'm kind of putting this out as a question because I've had it's been so long that I've had this like long range diesel car, and now I've got this, this electric, but like, is that around average for a car to get like 300 to 400
for a Corolla
miles?
That seems low.
That's about right. I think between 300 and 400 is like pretty normal for a normal car, you know?
Yeah.
So in my mind all this time, I've always thought that my Model 3 got like far less than most cars get, most gas cars get. But it sounds like it's not that much different. I'm just skewed by my previous experience with the diesel. Yeah.
That's obscene. You know, 600 miles on a tank is nuts.
And it was awesome.
But the big thing is, you know, the difference obviously is if you're really road tripping and you're going 300 miles in a petrol car and 300 miles in an electric car, you're going to be sitting at a charging station a lot longer than you would a gas station.
That's the big difference, right?
That's the big difference. Yeah. And speaking of that, I thought about something. When we get up to these 250 kilowatt hour chargers, and if you can really top off in like 15 minutes or get to your next destination, that actually is almost bad for me because a lot of times when I stop, I like stop and get out and you know, we'll sit down restaurant where I need like 30 or 40 minutes, you know, to eat. And like what's going to happen? So, I don't want to incur like charging, you know, so am I going to leave the table and go unplug and move the car because it's done before I'm done eating?
Why do they have to do it so fast?
But it is kind of...
are they thinking?
Here's where it really will make a difference. When you don't have a place to plug in your car on a regular basis, you don't have a house or garage or a convenient place at your work or whatever, and every week you need to go charge up. That is where... that's my guess of who is really going to benefit the most. Because you're right... I mean, with 300 and, you know, change miles of driving on a single charge, I mean, unless you're going a long distance, in which case, fly. Like, you kind of need a 30-minute break, really.
Right.
You know, because how long does it take you to go 300 miles? Like, it's several hours, right? It's not like you...
4 hours at best, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, since we're on the topic of ranting about things, have you guys seen... This is related. So 5G, we've not talked about 5G at all. I know it's kind of outside of some of our realms, but it's coming. It's all the hype and all the rage right now in the tech world. And AT&T, or at least the marketing team for AT&T, has taken it upon themselves to relabel 4G LTE as 5GE.
I saw that on my phone when I was in Florida. And I didn't know what that was.
Oh, okay. So it, I believe it stands for 5G Evolution, and some of the technologies that are being used when your phone says that are the similar technologies that will be used in 5G, but the speed is the exact same. It is just a relabeling of 4G LTE, 5GE.
I believe, to
the point, similar vein of the, it's wrong. You know, because the idea is then, I imagine, from AT&T's standpoint, that, oh, well, if we do this, we can say we're the first to have it.
Right.
And then people will think of us as the 5G leader. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's there's a worse company out there than AT&T.
Comcast.
Fair enough. But aren't they the same? You know, aren't they owned by probably the same people? I don't know.
Yes.
Man, I can't believe they're doing that.
I can believe it. But no, I did see that on my phone when I was in Florida, and I was kind of like, is this the 5G?
So,
is Florida more advanced than where I'm from?
Yes.
Don't be fooled, people. There is no publicly available 5G right now.
Because aren't they actually still even working on the standard for 5G? Like, isn't it still Like, it's because it's like an IEEE standard type of thing where it's like, we has to have this, kind of like USB-C.
Right.
You know, it's a protocol. Well, and have they even finished that end of it?
I'll give you my 3 seconds of, like, very impression is, well, and, you know, I'm close to it because Qualcomm are the ones that are developing most of the chips for that. So in San Diego, this thing is just everywhere. By the way, Qualcomm and Apple just settled their dispute and are basically like, yep, we're just going to rule the world. We decided to be friends again. So there's that. But one of the things is 5G for mobile has a lot more challenges than 5G for your home. So everything I've read points to you will get basically a wireless internet service in your home. Because your home doesn't travel at 80 miles an hour in a car, right? So it's very easy, or a lot of the challenges with mobile are not, you know, present when you have home internet. So I'm very excited about that. San Diego is listed as one of them. I believe there are 4 or 5 markets that actually AT&T, ironically, is the one offering it. So I believe some of that stuff is out there. But for the mobile stuff, you know, so the you know, fetus-like understanding I have of this is that 5G is going to be, in order for it to work, it's a higher frequency band. And the problem with higher frequencies is they don't travel as far, nor do they travel as well, like through concrete and things like that. Mm-hmm. So in order for your phone to really do it, you have to have a lot more infrastructure in place. And that's why mobile, I as far as I understand, is still going to be, you know, for at least wide adoption, still going to be a few years away. However, your home doesn't have nearly of as many of those problems, and so that we'll probably see much, much sooner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
I guess that higher frequency is why people are worried about health problems caused by it. I get questions all the time about 5G, and I've spent no time researching it yet. So
there's some really good.
Eventually, I'm going to need to do a video about it, but.
Yeah,
there's some really good videos out there.
To me, it just smacks of any new technology people are afraid of.
Yeah,
Wi-Fi.
Well, that's true, right? The radio will rot your ears. The TV will ruin your eyes. The internet will rot your
brain. But I've done no research. That's what I'm going to make that
clear. We just operate on that assumption, Joe. You don't have to say that.
Yeah.
Just...
yeah.
We know, Joe. We've seen your videos.
But, so to that point about the higher frequency thing, like I got Verizon for my phone. Because where I live is very kind of like canyons and hills and stuff, and they actually operate with older equipment, which it runs at a lower frequency and travels much, much further. Mm-hmm. That's why the Verizon network is, like, you know, more prevalent. Is not because it's like more advanced; it's because it's less advanced.
Lower frequency, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas T-Mobile and some of these other guys have the newer stuff that operates at higher, which will give you higher speeds when you have a good connection, when it's possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why AM radio travels so much further than FM, yep, because it's like you go around.
Exactly.
Yep. Exactly. And stuff. Yep. And it's
newer. Yep. Newer is not always better.
No. Just compromise.
Different ways.
Everything is a compromise. Like, especially in engineering, like you change one thing and it's going to change something else. You know, like, yes, it can maybe do this better, but now it does this worse. Like, that's just how physics tends to work. You know, and you can make improvements, but yeah. Anytime you, like, make a change, it's going to do something else, probably. You know, be more expensive, be harder to produce, harder to manufacture, you know, might, yeah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Well, speaking of health stuff, I've got a pretty mind-blowing thing we can kind of wrap this whole baby up with. Y'all know I've talked about CRISPR in some of my videos before. It's the gene editing technique that lets us sort of do gene manipulation and whatnot. It's a little bit controversial, but it could also, like, solve a lot of problems. Or cause a lot of them.
Let's experiment on babies.
Let's experiment. Yeah. Well, so I had several people send me this article, and I guess you've got it on your end over there. But
let me do my job.
Scientists have used CRISPR, the gene editing system, to create computers in cells, in human cells.
I don't get it.
To create dual core computer chips in cells.
No.
You don't have it?
No, I mean, I have it. I'm just saying no.
Okay. I'm just like, I don't like this.
I just don't believe this is possible.
This is gonna happen.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Excuse me.
Joe, don't die just because I might have disagreed with you.
It's a computer in my cells that are causing me to cough. So I'm going to just say right now, this is way the hell over my head. But I did do a video a long time ago on Moore's Law and how we could possibly transcend Moore's Law with new technologies and stuff. And one of those possible technologies was biological computers. And that's kind of what this is talking about here. Mm. But it's basically CRISPR uses this enzyme called Cas9 that goes through the DNA sequence, and it finds, you can program Cas9 to find a certain place, and it can cut there, and it can insert whatever you need it to insert there. So it's basically using this type of gene editing tool. It says they create a special version of Cas9 enzyme that can act as a processor, and it basically creates logic circuits using DNA by going through and inserting here and there, and you get inputs and outputs. And it says the special Cas9 instead reads the guide RNA as inputs and in response expresses particular genes. So it in turn creates certain proteins as output. So these processors act like digital half adders. Essentially, they can compare two inputs and two binary numbers and deliver two outputs. I'm clearly just reading the article at this point. But to boost the computing power, the researchers managed to squeeze two processor cores into one cell. Now, what's crazy about this, and it goes on, and we'll probably share a link to this article somewhere, but they're talking about they can do this inside one cell, but they can combine cells and tissues to create supercomputers out of human tissue. And create, like, they're actually talking about, like, supercomputer organs that can process just as fast as a regular computer.
Jeez.
Biologically.
What's the advantage of this versus making it out of, like, normal silicon or whatever?
Because you can. No, I don't know. I think they may speak to it down here a little bit. This is actually just a really short article, but they're calling them computational organs.
Creepy.
It far outstrips that of a digital supercomputer using a fraction of the energy. So it's an energy
thing. Oh.
Brilliant.
That'd be cool if servers and stuff, or, you know, big, like, supercomputers don't have to take up, like, a whole power plant to run processes and stuff. That's weird, though. Just think about it being alive.
It's still just binary input, though, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Because, I mean, the quantum computer thing is, like, a different animal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But maybe binary computers will go to living computers, and then quantum computers will be, like, the next, like, the other thing. Like, your phone will just
imagine
be, like, kind of alive.
If you had a computational organ
in
your body.
Whoa.
And you're just carrying a computer around with you everywhere you go that you can tap into and use.
Whoa. Whoa.
don't we have that?
Hey, it's called a brain. Ah.
Yeah.
No, but
sort
I mean...
of.
Imagine it is like
taking in thousands of inputs and making decisions. I don't know.
Imagine if it was
have a second brain.
Imagine if it was like Bluetooth though, and that just connects to your smart device. Like whatever you have in your hand, it just uses the CPU in your body, and you just have to eat a little bit more oranges to keep it going. You don't have to charge it or anything, you know?
I like you had me until you said Bluetooth, because
Bluetooth never
is
works.
Garbage.
Okay, fine.
It can't pass through your skin.
Fine, we'll find some other technology.
It would just, like, cut out every 2 seconds and, you know.
That's crazy, though. I like stuff like that. That's weird. It scares me.
But imagine if there was some way of, it's totally sci-fi crap, but, like, imagine if could have, like, a computational organ in your body that your body is powering, so you never have to charge it. And if you had some way of getting information out of it, either through your brain or through some device or something like that. Yeah, it's self-charging. That's
hey.
A self-charging computer.
Hey,
that's how it really works, people.
Full circle.
Oranges. You have to
full circle.
Oranges, more oranges, oranges. Always oranges.
That was just a mind blow. I thought I would throw
so,
out there. And...
But would you... Okay, did they mention that article? It doesn't seem to me that you would want this in your body.
I don't think they talked about putting it in your
okay.
body.
Okay, because...
I kind of went there.
Okay, good.
Ken, okay, my sure. question is, can you eat it?
So, well, I guess you could. It says, in the long run, these dual-core cell computers could be stacked up by the billion to make powerful biocomputers for diagnosing and treating disease. For example, the team says they could look for biomarkers and respond by creating different therapeutic molecules, depending on whether one or the other or both biomarkers are present. So it could be like it could be like a computer in your body that monitors your health and creates whatever organic drugs you need to fight off whatever's causing a problem in your body.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things like this, sort of. Morgan Spurlock did a really great show. I forget what it was called, but like 30-something. And
30 the, Rock from the Third Rock from the Sun.
30 Days, wasn't it?
Well, that was the movie. But he had a series on Netflix. I forget what it was called, but and he went and just did all these different things just to check him out. One of them was medical tourism, where people, you know, especially from the United States, because our healthcare system is complicated, we'll say. He went to Thailand to do something, and he was of a certain age as a male, where you get certain parts checked, and in order to check certain parts, he ate a pill that had a blinky light and a camera in it, and he ate the pill, and it goes through his body and comes out the other end, and it has all this data about his body now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of sounds in line with this, right? Of like even Tim, you know, if you ate this some way and it just collected data about what was going on inside of there, it could be a much richer data set to make decisions on instead of just, you know, looking from the outside in, kind of how we do now.
I mean, I was joking about eating it, but
no, I think that's yeah. I think it's a valid, you know,
tastes like chicken,
and until it becomes self-aware, and then it just replicates and takes over your body, and you become just like a, you know, parasitic host.
Yeah, of course, of course, that's bound to happen. But I was more worried about like, what if you just have this living computer, and your friend comes over and eats it, you know, and you're like, ah, dude, that was my supercomputer, man.
Do you have friends do that? So it's like, hey, what's this? It just starts chewing on something.
I mean, lab-grown meat's becoming such a big thing that maybe these two will have a crossover. Ooh. And you have lab-grown meat computers that after a certain amount of time, you're just like, I'm done using this computer. It's getting old and slow. I'll eat it.
Tastes like chicken.
Well, it's biodegradable.
Hey. True.
Cut down on computer waste.
That is a topic that if anyone wants to research, I'd be very curious, because there were several sci-fi books I've read about this where they call them Deegans. Where you eat meat, but it's deathless meat, and because it's like lab grown meat, right? Mm-hmm. An animal didn't live and die for it. That I think actually has promise and is very interesting.
Well, I definitely want to talk about that someday again after some research. But I love the concept of like, imagine every restaurant just has like solar panels on top, and then like they just power the whatever it takes to grow lab grown meat there, and like maybe a grow house for your food, and everything is like produced like micro house. You know,
you come up to a screen, you hit three buttons, and it grows a burger.
That would be awesome. I mean, maybe they're cultivating for a while, but
yeah, replicator.
That'd be so cool. And yeah, and like think about how green that could be, as opposed to raising an entire cow and feeding an entire cow for like years and then cutting it out open. You know.
Yeah.
Then you enter, was it the post-resource economy, where you don't need resources because everything can just be created?
3D print the world.
Now you're getting into like free energy, right? Like the gravitational wave thing, like somehow turning that into a nuclear turbine kind of a thing, where it's just, hey, it's just the universe's energy just floating around. We just harness that, so we have unlimited free energy.
I think every city has somebody in their garage creating a free energy device.
I mean, apparently Lexus has done it with their self-driving, self-charging.
Self-charging, yeah. Oh, I think we hammered on that enough, huh? Should we get out of here and talk about what we're doing now that we're all back? We're all back in the stuff.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing? I don't even want to talk about what I'm doing because you know what I'm doing. I've been working on it for a month and a half now. It's my...
Make a video, Tim. Do your job. Come on.
I don't know. No, my goal is to have it done. It's going to be done scripted this weekend and shot next week and then edited ASAP. But it's just... It's nuts, guys. It's nuts. I can't tell you how many emails I have to different people that can help me figure out stuff. Because I'm like, I don't get this. And then I don't even know where to start because a lot of it's probably ITAR or something.
Don't like this.
You know, we could use some of those people on this show.
It's true. It's true.
Why don't they just?
Well, we've been getting a lot of people asking for guests, and I guess we could just put out a call. If you guys have a favorite creator, scientist, communicator or whatever that you think we should have on here, let us know. We'll look into it.
Yeah.
Now, we can't make them talk to us.
Right.
But if they don't want to talk to us, we can't force them to do it.
But we can give you their address and someone can make them.
But then we thought
they're
about...
They're like duct taped to a wall with a microphone right here.
And then we thought about potentially making it so each one of us, maybe once a month, each one of us does a one-on-one with that person and includes it in the show. Tell us what your favorite format would be, because it could get a little weird if we just have a fourth person on the show the whole time. We might be talking over each other too much.
Maybe we could put a poll up on the thing on YouTube or something.
And we can do it on Twitter, too, and YouTube community. We'll do a poll. But let us know how you think we should do it, if we should do guests, if we should do guests like hosts where they're hosting too, or if you just want an interview with one person, with three people. Yeah. Yeah. Let us know.
Sounds. Joe, what are you working on?
I'm dipping back into existential dread territory.
Yay.
I was too happy for too long. I'm looking at the possibility of us entering a post-antibiotic world.
Mm.
Where our antibiotics, I'm sick.
ironically,
but I'm considering the possibility that the rise of superbugs that are resistant to all of our drugs that we have.
Yep,
like
going
the
back
plague.
To the days when a simple cut could kill you.
I don't want that.
Like the Panama plague that ruined bananas.
On this
I feel like
episode,
I need to do a video on bananas.
On this episode, the guys talk about bananas for 2 hours.
Yes.
Ben,
lots of potassium in this episode.
Ben, are you doing a banana video? Is that why you're so excited about them?
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, are you working on it?
How to charge a Tesla with bananas. Yeah, Mark Rober tried to do that. Did you see the thing where he tried to charge an electric car with lemons?
No.
So it's an old experiment, right? You can get a lemon, and it has citric acid, and there's a couple little things you put together, and boom, you have electricity. And so Volkswagen, was it? Somebody had like a race car, an electric race car that was going up in Pikes Peak or something, and they worked with him, and they're like, hey, you know, let's do a video about it. And so he wanted to charge a giant battery with lemons to then charge the car. And he had like 600 lemons on the thing all networked together. And it's just like not even close.
It was like
to a night.
That's funny.
You put like 10 solution. Million lemons or something.
It's like a watch battery.
It's a fun video. So
that'll get rid of range anxiety. Just make sure you have the back
two semis full of lemons following you at all times.
So I'm looking at how to charge Teslas with fruit. That's my next video.
I hope so. Don't lie to me. What are you working on?
I have a video about some of the people that have negative opinions about Tesla. I have a nice message for them.
People have negative opinions about Tesla?
Yeah.
No.
So I have a little message.
Is it to hold hands? Dear people that don't like Tesla, hold hands. But just period, not with who or what, just hold hands.
Yeah.
It's a good
video. Try to swim across the Pacific Ocean. Just go for that. That's the message.
That's me.
You know, people are allowed their opinions, and if they don't like a particular car company for whatever reason, I'm kind of okay with that. But when they transfer that over to SpaceX and hate on SpaceX too just because of the Elon connection, I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. They are doing amazing things.
Yeah.
And you're just hating at this point, you know? Yeah.
Yep. I don't get that, though. I don't get hating on anything. Few things.
Do you guys feel left? Like, we get so much love on this podcast. I feel like we're lacking some hate on the podcast.
We don't need that.
We don't need that?
You mean, like, us hating or people hating us?
People hating us.
Well, there's plenty of that.
I mean, on our individual channels.
And
on here?
Yeah, there's some. I don't know. In general, though, actually, our community is super positive because I feel like it is mostly like fans of our channels. So that
you're right. When I look through the comments of our videos, there's only usually two or three that make me cry. So
yeah, it's pretty good.
versus your actual channel, it's like watching The Notebook. Yeah, like it's just
every other comment makes you cry. Yeah,
that's right.
Oh, but don't you guys worry. I promise. As soon as I hang up here, I am going and sitting and scripting all day.
Te prometo.
I'm going to do it. Knock it out of the park.
Do it.
Yeah. I can't wait. I'm actually really
excited.
You heard
it here, folks. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well,
we did it.
Is that going to do it?
Hey, can I just say real quick, guys, no. It was really great hanging out with you guys last week.
Yeah.
Actually getting in the same room together. And
that was awesome.
Having a drink or two. That was a blast.
We need to do it again. We need to do it again. That was awesome. Maybe I think I'm coming out for Comic-Con in June or whenever. July?
San Diego?
Yeah. The Comic-Con.
Let's do it.
So I'll be coming out for that, I think.
There's like a bunch of spin-off Comic-Cons, but yeah. Cool.
Maybe we can get Joe to come out for that again. We'll get Joe out of the house more often.
Let me know when it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for our...
Ludicrous.
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 Future.